Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Now, from the Signature Bank Studios, this is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, fresh off his State of the Union address. Joe Biden has a new commercial up. He recognizes he's not a young guy, but...
Look, I'm not a young guy. That's no secret. But here's the deal. I understand how to get things done for the American people. I led the country through the COVID crisis. Today, we have the strongest economy in the world. I passed a law that lowers prescription drug prices. Caps insulin at $35 a month for seniors. For 4 years, Donald Trump tried to pass an infrastructure law, and he failed. I got it done. Now we're rebuilding America. I passed the biggest law in history to combat climate change because our future depends on it. Donald Trump took away the freedom of women to choose. I'm determined to make Roe v. Wade the law of the land again. Donald Trump believes the job of the president is to take care of Donald Trump. I believe the job of the president is to fight for you, the American people, and that's what I'm doing. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Can we do one more take?
Yeah, so...
Oh, he's so hip at the end.
So the whole point is that don't pay attention to his age. Don't pay attention to the fact that he's a senile kleptocrat. Look at all that he's done. This is what they are going to sell. This is what he was selling in part on Thursday night. And this is why there is no need for any debates. And that's not me saying it. It's Senator Chris Coons of Delaware, his national campaign co-chairman.
I was in the room for the debate in Cleveland that Chris Wallace tried to moderate. And it was chaotic at best. Donald Trump just busted through every possible rule or regulation of decency or decorum or following any of the directives of the moderator. I wouldn't encourage it, but I don't think the campaign or the president has made a decision yet. I just think that, frankly, the American people need to make up their own minds based on what difference Joe Biden has made in their lives.
Exactly. Focus on all the accomplishments. You know, there's no need to see them side by side, go back and forth. And that's the problem, you see. Joe Biden is a fundamentally decent man who's brought decency back to the White House. And Donald Trump is an ogre. He is boorish and indecent. He's a barbarian. And we just can't have the kind of civil discourse the American people deserve. So we're not going to have any discourse at all.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Our text line is up and running, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. Well, did you hear Biden over the weekend? A reporter asked him again, are you going to debate former President Trump? And he said, well, if he behaves. And I thought, what a condescending jerk. To say that, well, you behave, you wake up. Of course, they've got to have a debate. I mean, if he doesn't debate him, that's so reminiscent of 2020. Oh, I'm sorry, 2020. Remember that the COVID, so the third debate was canceled, and that was, I thought, one of the most important debates. And it's just we're going to relive that whole thing where Biden's going to be, you know, campaigning, not a lot out and about, but maybe a few appearances a week. I don't know. But he's got to man up and debate.
If he can get away, if they can get away with not debating, which is exactly what they were trial ballooning after the State of the Union. Look, he's got the vim and vigor. Yeah, he's fully in command of his capacities. And then you'll have the over-the-top bootlicking by people like Morning Joe. This is the best Biden I've known in 50 years. This is the best iteration of Joe Biden. And he's this... dizzying intellect. He's exacting. He's rigorous. He's a tiger in bed. You're going to hear all of that. And then you're no need for debates because Trump is indecent and Joe Biden is decent and you just judge him on his record. And we say that's good enough. I mean, they're not going to quite say it this way, but this is the imperious attitude. We say this is good enough for the American people. This is the basis on which you should decide. And if you want a debate, that's too bad because we don't believe that you deserve one. We know better. Right. We're going to represent the people in spite of the people. So that's the attitude. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. I would caution again, same mistake that was made in the run up to the State of the Union, that was made in the run up to those debates you mentioned in 2020. Why do conservatives spend all their time lowering expectations for Joe Biden? So that all it takes is for him to scream out a speech on the teleprompter for 45 minutes and he's back, baby, and everything's fine.
How many B12 shots do you think he got before that?
Right. And he's coked up and he's this and he's that. And that accomplishes what?
Well, on the way out, I mean, he didn't even know where to go.
What does that accomplish? Lowering the expectations for Biden accomplish? That's a question.
Yeah. Right? I mean, he accomplished something on Thursday because he didn't fall down.
So what does that's exactly what I'm talking about. Right. He didn't fall down. So that's the expectations we want to create for Joe Biden?
No.
Do people pay attention to like what they're saying and then the implications of what they're saying and how you're aiding and abetting the propaganda from the other side? I mean, it's just again and again and again because it's fun and because some dingbat conservative memesters have fun with it on social media. Smart. Right. Okay, lower expectations for him so that if he doesn't vomit on himself, he's fully capable of doing the job. Now, the good thing is that the American public, despite all this sort of fifth grade cloakroom memeing, has already passed judgment on Joe Biden. But, you know, if you continue to tell people that he can't tie his own shoes and he can give a speech or two here and there, make a joke or two, have a back and forth with Marjorie Taylor Greene here and there, then you're just doing his bidding. And it's baffling to me why some conservatives don't see this. Let's just have fun. Okay, I want to win. George in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Dan, heck, even in the Old West, Butch wanted rules in the knife fight.
Okay. Thanks for the call, George. Philip, Blue Island.
Both of these candidates are just extremely flawed. I don't know what it is, how both of them are able to stay at the level that they are, that they can be the president of the United States, especially one with the age and then the other one with the criminal indictments against him. And other things with Trump. It's just too much to add to. But of course, Biden's age is a problem. But I mean, we're still surviving. I think the economy is doing okay. Crime is high. America is a criminal enterprise. So lesser of two evils at this point. Again, I know you hate that phrase, but that's basically where everybody is.
Well, there's a lot of people that are, making that calculation as they do have to in a lot of elections because there's human beings running. So there's always going to be glaring flaws with the candidates. Nobody's ever been good. I mean, give me the candidate who's been good enough. Right. Oh, I don't know. I don't like the lesser of two evils because I think it's intellectually lazy. It's just a phrase that people say. Give me the last candidate. Oh, this is good enough. And everybody agrees that this is the best choice we've ever had. And these are wonderful choices and we can't go wrong no matter who we pick. Of course, that doesn't happen.
Best choice we ever had was Reagan.
Yeah, I understand.
That was just because somebody, Chicago Democrats voted for Reagan, helped put him in office.
Yeah, but people in 10 states that voted for Jimmy Carter, majority, didn't think so. People in one state didn't think so for Mondale. So it was close on Reagan. But, I mean, even those that that begrudgingly voted for Reagan. Oh, you know, the choices. It's just because Mondale's so bad. It's just because Jimmy Carter was such a disaster. Oh, you remember, he's the amiable dunce. That was the phrase Clark Clifford coined to on behalf of the what we didn't really know at the time, the burgeoning deep state, you know, the best and the brightest, the Beltway soothsayers. Oh, amiable dunce. He's a nice enough fellow, but, you know, he's an idiot. Sure. Okay. So I don't know. It's just right. This candidate has flaws and that candidate has flaws. And you have to go over them and make assessments. But of course, it's always going to be, you know, a cost benefit analysis, which is what it should be. This is how you have to make decisions with imperfect information in an imperfect world with imperfect people that we level up to represent us for a period of time. Kevin on the Kennedy.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. I was calling. It was right after his State of the Union. I believe he was standing next to Mike Quigley, but I'm not sure who he was actually speaking to. Someone had come up to him and said, "Can you believe people are actually talking about your cognitive decline?" To which Joe Biden responded, "I wish I had cognitive decline."
Yeah,
that
right.
That was his actual statement.
Yeah, I know, but okay. Yeah, okay. I saw that, but so what? He's like, you know, I mean, that's sort of like saying I wish I was ignorant because it's blissful.
This was his coming out party to show everybody. I'm old, but I'm with it. It's the last state of the State of the Union he's going to have before the November elections.
Yes.
A big audience because he turned down the Super Bowl audience. Said he could. That was the most watched Super Bowl ever, and he said no. So then people were watching this, and they're going to watch him at the DNC. He's got to sell himself, and I wasn't convinced.
The hot mic moment that Kevin and the Kennedy's talking about. Well, he has another hot mic moment too, where he's talking about having a come to Jesus meeting with BB,
right,
which is an odd turn of a phrase, talking about the Israeli prime minister, but and perhaps Joe should have a come to Jesus meeting with Jesus. But all this stuff goes to, again, point is to say exactly what we said in 2020, which is they say he's fine. Fine. It's fine. He's the best he's ever been. He's a force of nature. He's an immovable object. Fine. Fine. Now let's focus on what is happening under his watch. Let's focus on what, despite Philip from Blue Island, what three quarters of the country thinks the economy is and the track the country's on. If they say he's fine, let them make fools of themselves rather than trying to sort of disprove and sell past the close that he's not fine. That's a waste of time. You're feeding into their hand when you spend time. Oh, did you see this? And did you see that? And he had this stumble. I mean, you can have some fun with it because he is a buffoon. He should be the object of never-ending ridicule. But ridicule based on what he does in his official capacity as president of the United States, the crime family, the open border, the what we'll get to at 5:38, the debating over using the word illegal, which speaks to priorities, which speaks to seriousness about border security and public safety. You only have so much bandwidth in people's minds, especially the passive voter. You should really concentrate it on the thing that is most effective and most impactful to them. Not debating Joe Scarborough about whether Biden has the mental fitness for the job or talking about cognitive tests and all these other things. They say he's fine. It's their choice to put up whoever they want, the Democrat Socialist Party, as their nominee. So let's get to it.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, just talking a little bit more post-mortem on Biden's State of the Union speech, the fallout over the weekend, including, by the way, the arrest that on Thursday night of Kareem Nkui's father. Boy, I'll tell you what, if I were advising Joe Biden and the Biden White House, I mean, this was, you know, I know you talked about it on Friday, but this is, you know, that moment on Thursday night, in case you haven't seen it.
All Americans deserve the freedom to be safe. And America is safer today than when I took office. Year before I took office, murder rates went up 30%. 30% they went up. The biggest increase in history. It was then.
Abby Gate, 19 Marines. That was Steve Nkui, Kareem Nkui's father, who was one of those Marines killed in that catastrophic Afghan withdrawal.
And his pain is still so real and raw.
By the way, his Kareem Nkui's mom, who I think that the mom and dad are divorced, but she said that the arrest was BS.
Oh, and, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, well, they're obviously unified on what happened to their son, if not on other matters. But yeah, she said it was BS. And I mean, the idea that I think it's his misdemeanor obstruction of Congress charge or something, although who knows, by the time DOJ gets done with him, he'll probably be an insurrectionist and serve 20 years.
charged. I don't believe her. What is she saying? The handcuffing of him, that picture is BS?
No, that the fact that he was arrested was
okay.
BS. I don't know how you let Steve Nkui be prosecuted for that excited exhortation. I'm not saying that that's appropriate, but really, you want to arrest a Gold Star father over that, and you want to see charges pressed against him? Okay, all right. I wouldn't surprise me, but I'm just saying. Wow.
Onions. I mean, I don't know. And Kareem's older brother committed suicide.
Right.
Soon after his brother was killed because he was so distraught over his best friend dying.
Yeah.
And so I support that dad 100% what he did. Good for him. And Biden up there spewing lies. Oh, cities are safer. No, it's not.
Right. And it also, the other thing it did is it reminds everybody about the catastrophic Afghanistan withdrawal.
Yeah.
What happened at Abbey Gate, the 19 Marines that were killed, and that's something, as we were talking about before the break, let's train the electorate's attention on the damage Joe Biden has done rather than the style in which he's done it. The withdrawal from Afghanistan is a good example. And let's connect some dots, as Trump has on the trail. You know, don't think that Putin wasn't watching what happened in Afghanistan, what happened in Kabul, in terms of weighing if and when to go into Ukraine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's connect the dots about Biden's, general incompetence. I don't care the basis of the incompetence, terrible judgment calls, catastrophic leadership. the death tolls that it that those terrible judgment calls have piled up. Focus there. How raw was that when he yelled out? And now thinking about what we saw, and all those people running down the runway, and obviously the Marines that were killed, and the families, now all these Gold Star moms and dads, and I mean, that stuff that sticks with you. Joe Biden's malapropisms don't. Know what I'm saying?
312-642-5600. Our turnkey.pro answer line, getting lots of text messages on that text line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
By the way, I did watch it, the State of the Union speech, but if you didn't, you didn't really have to.
Why?
Because it was largely the same speech he's given the previous 2 years. And somebody did a great editing job on social media, posted this on Twitter. Literally, just topic by topic. I'll give you an example.
Rinse and repeat.
Joe Biden, exporting products, creating jobs. The first, the first clip, 2023. The next clip, 2024.
For too many decades, we imported projects and exported jobs. Now, thanks to what you've all done, we're exporting American products and creating American jobs. Now, instead of importing foreign products and exporting American jobs, we're exporting American products and creating American jobs.
Oh my God.
I'm building the economy. 2022, okay. 2023, 2024, right in a row.
Build the economy from the bottom up and the middle out, not from the top down. To build an economy from the bottom up and the middle out, not from the top down. Building an economy from the middle out and the bottom up, not the top down.
COVID, 2022, 2023. 2024, right in a row.
This year, COVID-19 no longer need control our lives. Today, COVID no longer controls our lives. The pandemic no longer controls our lives.
Oh, my God.
Defining America.
Oh, boy.
2022, 2023, 2024. It's nice when you can just keep turning in the same homework over and over again.
The only nation that can be defined by a single word, possibilities. Actually, I can define it in one word, and I mean this, possibilities, possibilities.
I'm a capitalist. Got to shoehorn that in.
I'm a capitalist. Look, I'm a capitalist. I'm a capitalist. I'm a capitalist.
2022, 2023, 2024. Even the mundane, replacing lead pipes. 2022, 2023, 2024.
Began to replace the poisonous lead pipes so every child, every American has clean water to drink at home and at school. We're also replacing poisonous lead pipes. Removing poisonous lead pipes so every child can drink clean water without risk of brain damage.
Buy American.
We're going to do it by buying American. Buy American products. We're going to buy American. We're going to buy American. Buy America.
2022, 2023, 2024. So, I mean, the other thing this tells you is, if in case it wasn't obvious, this is just, all a show. All the clapping and the standing up over the pat lines and the excitement and the deep analysis by the punditry after the speech. It's the same speech. And frankly, it's probably you could do the same thing with the pundits. It's the same analysis because it's the same speech. It's just everybody reciting their lines.
Right.
It's all, I mean.
The only thing different was he said my predecessor about 35 times during his speech.
It's
say his name.
I don't know if it is a show like going to the theater, or is it a scam like a hustle, or some combination of the two. I mean,
it wasn't unifying. It didn't make me proud to be an American. I'm like, this is just him ranting as a campaign stop.
Just something just like also just the hilarity of this, thinking about how long he's been saying the same things. Well, how long is this going to take? You've been saying this literally the same thing, promising the same thing for the last 3 years of your State of the Union speech. And
what
you're
still
promising the same thing. So 500,000 EV charging stations. 2022, 2023, 2024, right in a row.
We'll build a national network of 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations. We're going to build 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations. The IBEW work is building and installing 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations.
Well, when does it start?
Right. Exactly. You're right. That's a very good point.
When is it going to be finished? You passed the backdoor Green New Deal. All that money's been allocated.
And what do you have to show for it, big guy?
And then, you know, in terms of the typical sort of class warfare politics they try to play with the tax code. I mean, it's the same thing over and over and over again. You think, oh, I watch the State of the Union. I'm very informed about these things. No, you're not. You just listen to the same talking points and you regurgitate them. You know, these people on the left pretend, oh, yeah, you know, he made that. Did you catch that speech last night? He made a really important point about these Fortune 500 companies that don't pay any taxes.
Yeah, he's going to raise the tax rate from 21 to 28%. Did you hear?
That really grabs me. That really grabs me. Oh, these Fortune 500 companies that don't pay any taxes. I heard that in Biden's State of the Union. Yeah, I know. You heard that in Biden's State of the Union in 2022, yeah. 2023, and 2024.
55 of the Fortune 500 companies earned $40 billion in profit and paid zero in federal taxes. 55 of the largest corporations in America, the Fortune 500, made $40 billion in profits and paid zero in federal taxes. 55 of the biggest companies in America made $40 billion and paid zero in federal income tax. Zero.
So you've been saying the same thing for 3 years. If you're so upset about it, why don't you do something about it?
This is great that you found that. That's amazing.
How about ending cancer?
Oh, boy.
Again, these throw-ins. Throw-ins. You know, check these boxes. It's like Mad Libs.
Let's end cancer as we know it. Let's end cancer as we know it. Like, end cancer as we know it.
He's been, I mean, if,
well,
on
he
that
was
one,
in charge, too, because Obama put him in charge of, you know, eradicating cancer.
Yeah, on that that line, he's literally been saying for the better part of 15 years.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Pat in Lockport, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, good morning, Dan and Amy. You know what? He's talking about what a good economy we had 4 years ago. I wasn't paying $3.69 for eggs. He got us through COVID? Really? You got us through the damn flu. What did the CDC just put out the other week? Treat your quote-unquote COVID as the flu.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you something else. As a caregiver, I've held the hand of the dying and prayed that they would go to a better place. But I'm telling you now, when this country dies, there won't be a better place. There will only be a deeper hell. And that's my comment for today.
Thanks, Pat. Jim in Sheboygan.
Yeah, I was listening to what you just talked about, and I was thinking maybe a speechwriter was from Harvard.
Claudine Gay, yeah.
But yeah.
Right, thanks for the call. Well, I mean, I suppose you can't plagiarize yourself. His speechwriter is, Joe Biden is not averse to plagiarism. We know he had to drop out of the ADA campaign after it was revealed that he plagiarized speeches from Neil Kinnock, a British Labor Party leader. Remember that in the great annals of Joe Biden's history? This guy's always been a slouch.
And a lie. Liar.
He's always been a slouch. He's always been vacuous. This is what I say. This is whatever. This is an aged version of the same guy you've been watching in public life for the better part of 40 years. That you've been unimpressed with for the better part of 40 years. So you should continue to be unimpressed because he's unimpressive and corrupt. You know, now not that he ever wasn't, but the privilege that comes with D.C. power to enrich his family, that other piece of the conversation that has really been marginalized over the last several weeks, understandably so, because of more pressing issues like the border and public safety, but not because of cognitive tests and conspiracy black, fantasy politics about how an unnamed they is going to replace him and with whom they're going to replace. I mean, all that stuff. What a waste of energy.
Right.
I'm talking to conservatives on this topic.
Right. And stop with Michelle Obama, that she's someone to come out and save Biden, save the Democratic Party. She's not.
So the other matter, since we've gotten through Biden redux, Biden on repeat, for 3 years. Oh, the applause and the, oh, the scowling and the booing. I mean, it's the same speech.
No.
Oh, goodness.
The suffragettes were out, Dan. I thought of you.
Bob in Buffalo Grove.
Good morning, Dan. Welcome back. And good to hear you, Amy, again. Is somebody going to fact check him? The deficit is not decreasing. It's still increasing, Joe. Have a great day.
Thanks, Bob. So we've the arrest, and I guess they're going to move forward with charges against Steve Nikui, which is
they haven't dropped him yet.
Incredible to me if that happens. The just that the point about the speech being a cut and paste job with a little bit more Trump focus, because, you know, it's a campaign speech, as everybody knows, but it always is a campaign speech. So that analysis doesn't really. It's not really particularly important. And this will dissipate into the ether. All this really tells you is what the campaign message is going to be for the next 7 months, just to tell how they're going to market Joe. And then you have the ad that we played that, you know, I'm old, but I get things done. Don't pay attention to what the things are. I just get stuff done, and don't believe your lying eyes at the grocery store, the gas pump. You know, things are going well. We're taming inflation, jobs, job creation, exporting our products. Everything's hunky dory. Of course, that's what they have to say. But now you know exactly the angle of incidents. They're not going to debate because Trump is indecent and so on and so forth. So you just get the script they're going to use for the next 7 months. So it's helpful to know so you can identify it and actually. You know, for your friends who don't pay as much attention as people to, you know, our listeners, people listen to this show, predict what they're going to say. Tell your friends who think, oh, this is all on the up and up, what these people are going to say and what angles they're going to take. Because when it comes true, be like, oh, my gosh, maybe some scales will fall from some eyes. Maybe some people will realize they're being hustled. I don't know. It's worth a try, though. The other matter, of course, is Biden's exchange with Marjorie Taylor Greene, and where he confused Lakin Riley with the head football coach of USC. And I doubt he's even a football fan, but whatever. So that was a moment. By the way, Lakin Riley's mom called it pathetic that he didn't know her daughter's name. And of course, Trump has met with the Riley family now.
Well, can you imagine if somebody got George Floyd's name wrong and called him Jim Floyd? The whole, like, the world would be, oh my God, did you hear this? But it's okay for him to get it wrong. And I'm the biggest name assassinator, you know that, but it's Lakin Riley.
He's thinking about the Bears going to take Caleb Williams, number one overall. Oh, yeah, he's thinking about USC football, so he's thinking Lincoln Riley. Anyway,
CPAP on his face at night.
So the big takeaway, of course, on Friday and into the weekend was Biden referring to Lakin Riley's killer as an illegal. And he was immediately rebuked by the full complement of leftist leaders who ran to CNN, and CNN ran to them to say, come on, he shouldn't have. Pramila Jayapal, for example, she is, of course, the band manager for the Socialist Spice Girls in the House.
He should have used the word undocumented. I don't believe that the president's heart is with the word illegal.
Mm-hmm. LaFonza Butler, she's a senator from California for the moment, interim.
It's unfortunate that the president used that language. I don't believe that is the language that he believes in his heart about immigrant people who find their way to this country to make a better life for themselves.
Mm-hmm. He shouldn't have said it. And here's what we're going to say, everybody. He shouldn't have said it, but that's not his heart. Mitch Landrieu, former mayor of New Orleans, now Biden campaign advisor.
There has been at least one Democrat that has criticized it. Joaquin Castro has said, like, this using that word and illegal dehumanizing is problematic. What did you make
of
that?
Well, that's probably true. He probably should have used a different word, and I think he would know that.
Yeah, exactly. Of course he knows that. He's it was a mistake. Nancy Pelosi.
Now, you should have said undocumented, but it's not a big thing.
No, it's a big thing.
Well, it's a huge thing, yeah.
It's a big thing. It's a big enough thing that when the big guy, Mr. 10%, president sat down with Jonathan Capehart over the weekend on MSNBC. He was fully contrite.
During your response to her heckling of you, you used the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Lake and Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And look, when I spoke about the difference between Trump and me, one of the things I talked about on the border was that his, the way he talks about vermin, the way he talks about these people polluting the blood. I talked about what I'm not going to do, what I won't do. I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect. Look, they built the country. The reason our economy is growing, we have to control the border and more orderly flow. But I don't share his view at all.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
What does that tell you about where the neo-Marxist party is? That's the obsession by their leadership after the fact.
He could have taken that moment to apologize for getting her, saying her name wrong.
Yeah.
And apologizing for his policies that allowed that monster into this country to begin with. Those people that are crossing right now are not building our country.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing I found remarkable about that statement, too. The people who've come here illegally built our country, past and present. Illegally, they built the people who have come. Really?
My grandpa helped build this country, and he came through Ellis Island. He came in the right way.
Yeah, not going to be disrespectful. But I'm happy to be disrespectful to American citizens.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So, I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So the Illinois primary election is a week from tomorrow.
Yes. And can I give some unsolicited advice, please? When you go to vote for Trump or whoever you decide to, you have to vote for a delegate underneath Trump's name. And if you don't vote for one of those delegates, we were told over the weekend that will your vote will not count. Does that make sense?
No.
Did I explain that correctly?
So no.
My sister went to the Wheeling Township Republican meeting, which she, you know, goes to once a month. And at that meeting, they explained to everybody and they showed a ballot and saying, you're going to vote for Trump, but you have to vote for a delegate underneath his name. Just pick one or whoever you want to vote for. And if you do not do that, then your vote will not count. So PSA for the day.
Okay. Well, first of all. First of all, there's no contest, so
right.
the delegates are going to go to Trump. Yeah, the voting for delegates to officially send them to the convention, so they can cast their votes for Trump and their committee. If you vote for Trump, your vote is going to be counted. Okay. On the state level, some other things going on that may inform your vote to the extent that there are any efforts being made by Republicans to win legislative seats. I don't think there are. I'm not familiar with any. There may be a few Republican candidates bouncing around running for legislative offices. This is sort of the important. This is the important part. Since the presidential is a fait accompli for the primary, right? And since in the general election, probably a fait accompli as well, frankly, barring something cataclysmic that would change the political landscape in this state that quickly. Certainly be difficult to anticipate what that would look like. But with respect to the suburbs and even some of the exurbs, I don't know, maybe you want to pay attention to state legislative offices? Anybody? No? Okay. Well, if you don't, then they're just going to continue rolling you. So as I said many times, speaking of putting me on repeat, like Biden at the State of the Union, we should just can these phrases so I can don't have to expend the additional energy. As long as you're there, you might as well try and fight for something, right? As long as you're in Illinois,
yeah,
you might as well participate, right? I don't know. That's what I tried to do when I was there. I still do, even though I'm not.
Keep Illinois out your mouth.
The latest piece of legislation you may want to take judicial notice of, sponsored by Representative Maura Hershauer. She doesn't represent the North Shore. She doesn't represent the city of Chicago. Hershauer's in West Chicago. She represents Western DuPage County up north into Cook County, places like Stream, you know, incurs into Streamwood. I mean, it was like from West Chicago to Bartlett over to Streamwood. So basically a middle income district with a sizable Latino population is how I describe her district. Suburban district. And she has sponsored House Bill 2329 that would add some regulatory layers to gun ownership in the state of Illinois, as if there aren't enough, even with Supreme Court decisions. William Kirk is the head of the Washington Gun Law Outfit, and we've used some of his comments on what's going on before, because he's an expert in this legal space, and he's got sort of a 50-state look at what gun banners are doing in places like New York or Illinois or California. So it's good context and perspective. He provides a nice distillation of House Bill 2329, sponsored by suburban legislator Maura Hershauer. Two things it does. Pay attention if you have any interest in protecting yourself. Why would you, though, in Cook County, in the suburbs, in Illinois? I mean, it's not like we have a crime problem.
Biden said we don't have one. Crime is down in America.
Two things. Firearm transfer permit to purchase a gun.
Okay.
And mandatory training for FOID card renewal. Those are two new things that are proposed in this bill. Firearm transfer permit to purchase a gun. You have to get a firearm transfer permit approved by your local police department in order to purchase a gun. And an 8-hour training.
8 hours?
For FOID card renewal. And it's even a little bit more complicated than that. So let's hear from William Kirk, who provides the explanation, sort of a summary, and then we'll go into each of those two prongs of this legislative measure.
It does a few things, but the two big things I want you to understand is it creates a new type of permitting, which is a firearm transfer permit, which means you actually have to go through a background check to then go purchase a firearm. And then it adds mandatory training. Anytime any of you come up for renewal on your FOID card, you're going to be having to go through mandatory training. Now, I get it to the folks of Illinois. You might sit there and go, well, we're used to this. We're constantly getting kicked in the shin. So I guess it's just going to be another step. No, it's not going to be another step. What it's going to be is it's another tool by which they're going to use to disarm all of you, the lawful and responsible gun-owning Illinois residents.
Okay. So there's the summary. Here's first up, the firearm transfer permit.
Okay.
It adds a whole new section to the Firearm Owners Identification Act and now establishes that any time you want to so much as even purchase a firearm, you will need to go and apply to your local police department for a firearms transfer permit. And if, God willing, the local police department grants you that permit, it is only good for 10 days. This creates a triple background check system. Don't believe me? Check this out, Illinois. All of you have to go through a background check to get a FOID card. You have to have the FOID card in order to get the firearms transfer permit, which also requires a background check. And then, of course, you're going to go to a reputable FFL and purchase a firearm, which, of course, will run you through a background check. So, Illinois, if this becomes law, you're going to have to go through a background check to go through a background check to go through a background check in order to purchase a firearm.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. The nice thing that this does, the background check to go through a background check to go through a background check,
yeah,
is it sets up the gun registry, which has long been warned about.
Yep.
And you probably thought, oh, because of these Supreme Court decisions and shall issue right to carry permits and so that regime now being in force, we don't have to worry about these things anymore, and the gun banning stuff is just the delusions of gun nuts and so forth. Getting through the back door what they can't get through the front door, what the left customarily does.
This will absolutely, positively assist in what is already being created, which is the Illinois Gun Registry. Don't believe me? Well, here's what else the bill states. Each local law enforcement agency shall keep records of those permits and make them available to the Illinois State Police through the law enforcement agency's data system. What else would they be accumulating that data for? And then, since we can't have may-issue carry regimes anymore, what this legislation does is it just turns the firearms transfer permit into a may issue and gives law enforcement broad discretion. Again, the bill reads, the local law enforcement agency may deny a permit to purchase a firearm to an applicant if the agency, in its discretion, believes it is in the interest of public safety.
So you go to your local police, say, I need a firearm transfer permit because I want to buy a 9mm. And I don't know, maybe your local police chief is a gun banner. And maybe you're outspoken conservative in your community. No, I don't think so. I'm concerned that this would endanger the public safety. And so I'm going to deny the firearm transfer permit that you need to purchase a firearm.
What about this 8 hours to renew our FOID cards?
Yeah, we're getting to that.
But I'm just saying, Mike's saying it's 10 hours, but whatever. But, I mean, I'd rather spend 8 hours getting a concealed carry permit than that.
Well, you have to spend 15 hours to get a concealed carry permit.
Right, but I'm just saying if you're going to spend time, I don't want the government telling me. And it's just another money grab. I'm sure they're going to charge us for 8 hours.
So here's William Kirk from Washington Gun Law on the second piece of the second part of this legislation, the FOID card piece and the required training. But there's a kicker to this. And California provides an example of the real world play that's being made here. You know, the same thing with the background check for the background check for the background check and then police discretion. Well, there's a wrinkle here with respect to it. It's not just 8 hours of training for renewal. And if that's not onerous enough, as if, you know, that there's also something else, which is that 8 hours of training you need to renew your FOID card, you're not going to get it.
If you are applying for a FOID card or you're asking just to renew your currently existing FOID card, you will have to complete an 8-hour state-sanctioned, state-licensed live-fire training program in order to continue that card. The specific language of the bill reads, if he or she is applying for or renewing a firearm owner's identification card, that he or she has completed at least 8 hours of handgun safety training approved by the director of the Illinois State Police. Okay, now for any of you who still don't think this is a big deal, the training program will have to be approved by the Illinois State Police. It is a high probability that what they will create is a program that is virtually impossible to find, virtually impossible to comply with, virtually impossible to get signed up for. Don't believe me? ask anybody in the state of California, because this is the subject of several lawsuits about the fact that they have now mandated training. They've removed most of the private instructors from the training curriculum. So now you can only get it through a law enforcement agency, which shockingly has been defunded. So they are overworked and understaffed. They don't have the money or the resources to put together the program. Shockingly, nobody could actually go get the training necessary to get a firearm. And that is exactly, Illinois, how they will disarm you.
Pretty straightforward. Any questions? Any interest in state legislative offices in Illinois? Or you're fine with the balance of power there? Not that the House and Senate Republicans deserve support except as a default, but at least you wouldn't have measures like this, not just advanced. You'd have still have them advanced by Democrats, but you wouldn't have them go anywhere because... if the balance of power were different, potentially. So, I mean, in terms of like it not mattering, Illinois, yes, it's a failed state. But I guess how much punishment would you like to endure for the time you're there at the hands of your state government that hates you?
Dan and Amy, don't worry. Illinois gangbangers and migrants will be exempt from the new gun regulations.
Yeah, well, they're not... the gangbangers and people who are coming here to commit crimes, pretty straightforward how that plays out. Phil and Darian, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, listen, Dan, maybe we're looking at this the wrong way. Isn't it true that you just stated that we have to go to a police station or your local law enforcement building to get approval? Is that right? Did I hear that right?
To get a firearm transfer permit to purchase a weapon, yes.
Okay. So we all know that a certain demographic of people do not like the police. So it seems to me that this is racist. They just don't want black people to have guns.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, okay. And what else do we got? Anything? I'd love to hear from somebody who even knows, who's represented by a Democrat. That's 90% of suburban Chicago, and even knows what's going on in that race, that legislative race for state rep or state senate. Anybody? Jordan in Antioch.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. the other thing that I love that guy Washington State Gun Law. He's really informative and he knows his crap. But I think he has a video out. I'm not sure, but I know Mr. Guns and Gear, if you want to check that out. The other thing they're not telling you, excuse me for the cough, is that ATF is now hamstringing all small businesses for FFL dealers, and they're trying to eliminate those. So you can only be funneled through a big box store to buy your firearms, Cabela's and all that. So that way they can control that too. But they're looking to eliminate small business FFLs through restriction and regulation. And then as far as your regulation through your police department, I have a Lake County sheriff who openly on Facebook says that nobody should have a quote-unquote assault weapon, so good for me. The other thing I called about is, as far as the ballot goes, early voting, I don't know about the primary day, but early voting, when you select a Republican ballot, down the right side of the ballot, they're right. You have to select your delegates for your candidate. There is still, so on the ballot, I tried to send a picture to the text line of the ballot, but it's delegates for Trump, delegates for Haley, and delegates for DeSantis. And I'm assuming if you don't fill out your delegate for Trump, since he's the only candidate, it doesn't count. I guess you can still select delegates for Haley and DeSantis who aren't in the race. I don't understand it. It sounds like voter intimidation to me.
Thanks for the call, Jordan. Okay. Joe in Naperville.
Yeah, I have a question. I hope somebody can have the answer. How many present or past criminals actually had a valid FOID card? And did you guys know that you cannot use your FOID card to get a driver's license in Illinois? They will not accept it as a form of ID in Illinois, but you need it to purchase a firearm? Isn't that kind of ironic?
Thanks for the call, Joe. Anonymous on the proposed bill.
Yeah, hi. This is Bob from Lombard. Sorry.
Okay.
Thanks for taking my call. The FOID card, if you have a FOID card, they background check you every 24 hours. I used to be an FFL, and that's the way the background check works. So you're background checked every day. Now you're going to add two layers to that. Also, if you go to a police department to get a permit to transfer a firearm for a purchase and they deny you, what happens if you already own guns? Do they start an investigation for that now?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. Thanks for the call. The obvious answer is, well, this law would be prospective, not retrospective, because we have sort of this constitutional prohibition against ex post facto laws. But, in Illinois, the Constitution is just something to work around, like this piece of legislation so indicates. So, yeah, I mean, what's the purpose of this effective registry, do you think? What's the purpose of mandate to turn in your assault weapons if you own them under the quote unquote assault weapon ban that was passed? Mm-hmm. I mean, again, through the back door, what they can't get done through the front door, but their attitude toward law-abiding citizens owning the means of their own protection, it hasn't changed. Of course it hasn't changed. So now they just have a little bit more complicated landscape on which to operate. And they are. I mean, the California comparison with respect to the eliminating private instructors and running it all through a state. What's the turnaround time on FOID cards? I think under law, it's 90 days. What's the actual turnaround time?
During COVID, people waited months to get theirs.
So, right. So we're going to mandate this training that you can't readily access. We're going to mandate the triple background check. We're going to make it as onerous as possible under the heading of public safety.
If it saves one
for law-abiding citizens to exercise their individual Second Amendment right to self-protection. But that's the state. That's the state that's been chosen by the people. And again, I'm still waiting for the call to tell from anybody anywhere in the suburbs. I'm really excited about this Republican candidate for state rep, state senate. I guess I'll be waiting for another cycle. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
All right, big shout out to the Iowa Hawkeyes who won the Big Ten Championship in overtime against Nebraska. Yes, go Hawks. All right, if you want to see the Chicago River dyed green while celebrating St. Patrick's Day, Trump Hotel in Chicago is hosting a morning with an open bar, Irish-inspired brunch, Irish dance performers, and a DJ while the river is being dyed green. For your chance to win a ticket to this awesome event, go to 560theanswer.com and use the keyword Trump. Good luck.
That was the Iowa girls team.
Yeah, Iowa girls team. Yeah, the boys are already out. They lost to Illinois yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not going to the tournament.
No, they're
unless they somehow they win the Big Ten tournament, which I don't think is going to happen. All right. We were talking about, we have this election coming up in Illinois, don't you know, a week from tomorrow. It's a primary election, so be selecting Republican candidates, or if you vote Republican, if you pull a Republican ballot, that will be on the ballot in November, including like at the state and local level. Remember those levels of government? And talking about this latest gun grab gambit sponsored by Maura Hershauer, who incredibly represents middle-income families in the western part of DuPage County up into Cook County, northwest suburban mm-hmm. Cook County. There's some other things going on, too. What did you do for Thank an Abortion Provider Day?
Yeah, and that's a thing. This is not something from The Onion. The Abortion Provider Appreciation, Dan, I thought you might have forgotten about it.
Yeah, so
Gross.
So, you know, abortion and guns, we're not allowed to talk about those things. But the pro-abortion, anti-gun left has no problem. Isn't that always, don't you always find that interesting? Shh. Republicans, don't talk about those things. Okay. Yeah, right. Abdicate the playing field and then be perplexed as to why you lose, why you're in the super minority, because the abdication was supposed to provide political salvation. And yet distinct super minorities. Gosh, I wonder if the two are connected in some way. Well, Governor Jelly Belly, he had a message for Thank an Abortion Provider Day.
Oh, I mean, it's so gross. With his Think Big USA group.
I wonder if they've Hallmark has gotten into the act here. Here's Jelly Belly's message.
Today is Abortion Providers Appreciation Day. Thank you to the doctors, nurses, clinic staff, and volunteers who help those in need, treating their patients with dignity and compassion. You're on the front lines of this fight, and your sacrifices and your work make me proud.
As abortion providers, we witness the strength and resilience of our patients every day. It's an honor to stand by their side and provide the care that they deserve.
Abortion care is about respecting a person's autonomy and their right to make their own medical decisions. That's why I'm proud to provide this care.
In Illinois, we've taken profound steps to protect abortion providers and their patients from legal attacks.
Every day, we see the impact of restrictive laws and the importance of fighting for expansive abortion access. It's a fight we cannot afford to lose.
But the fight for reproductive freedom goes beyond Illinois. With Think Big America, we're going state by state and across the nation to protect a woman's right to an abortion, because no one should have to escape to another state or face legal barriers to make decisions about their own bodies.
Join Think Big America.
Join Think Big America.
Join us in this crucial mission. Together, we can protect reproductive freedom across the nation.
I guess days of safe, legal, and rare are over. That used to be the slogan of like pro-choicers who are not completely celebratory about abortion. That message, which is consistent with Jelly Belly's message on the topic and these other pro-abortion radicals, is celebratory. Is an abortion a happy event? Is that something to celebrate? I'm not talking about demonizing women, but I'm just, can you say that it's an unfortunate occurrence, even if you're pro-choice? Or does it have to be full-throated celebration?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Oh, yeah, well, you've had people with Pritzker press conferences celebrating their abortion. Like, I had an abortion. I didn't use protection. Yeah, right. Uh-huh. We've heard that excuse before. And just celebrating it. And it's so bizarre to me why they would brag about it. It's just grotesque.
So,
and now again, in
Illinois, is there any Republican that's going to respond to that? No. Any Republican going to talk about Maura Hirschauer's gun ban bill? I don't know. Do they even know about it? Anybody going to talk about billions that are being spent on people in this country and in this state illegally because of our sanctuary designation? No.
Somebody texted in, is illegal immigrant appreciation day next?
So in Illinois, I mean, they rescinded parental notification for a minor to get an abortion, an invasive surgical procedure. Of course, they eschew any sort of regulations for abortion service providers. I mean, these are surgical centers that would be attendant to any other institution that provides invasive surgical procedures. And if you're not on board with that, you're a misogynist, I mean, is there any like on so many topics with respect to the left? Is there any pro-choice voters? Are there any pro-choice voters left who don't want to celebrate abortion, who believe safe, legal, rare? Or is it 100% all the time, taxpayer funded, any age for the woman, any age for the child? Is that where it's at now? I don't know. And if that is where it's at, should that be challenged? Should that be challenged by conservatives? Or we're just not going to talk about it? We're just going to let them talk about it, and we're going to have no response.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
That doesn't disturb those within your communities of interest that Illinois is a state that touts being an abortion dumping ground, a gambling mecca, a drug center of the Midwest. By the way, that Maura Hirschauer, mm-hmm. I'm not just talking about weed. That Maura Hirschauer wanted to decriminalize hard drugs like Oregon did, and then they just reversed. Mm-hmm. That's the state rep in the Western Burbs.
Yeah,
she's banning guns, and she wants to decriminalize hard drugs, and nobody knows. And I assume that she has no competition, or maybe competition in name only, with some Republican running against her in the fall. But there'll be no like legitimate campaign, and thus no real chance to win that seat. And then, of course, you'll have just Republicans say, oh, well, because the establishment will say, oh, the combine Republicans, oh, well, because Trump is on the ballot. And the conservatives will say, oh, because the establishment is has sold us out, and things will just carry on the way they are.
Well, Hannah Billingsley is running against Eris Garcia for that in the Republican primary for the 49th district.
Yeah. And with that, and tell me more.
No, I'm just saying that there, at least there's competition, because in some districts there aren't.
Yeah, there's a name on the ballot in the western suburbs in states that used to be controlled for a long time by Republicans. Gosh, again, how did that happen? Because the Republican Party was too conservative? Is that how? Uh-huh. And then the response now, if you're going to participate, is to do what? I want to participate. I want to do something. I pay attention. So we can't get people really involved in school board elections very much. There's some exceptions. People don't know who their state legislators are. Certainly don't know, the competition. Not paying attention to that. The leadership is terrible, so there's no internal accountability from whatever local organizations are left to the leadership of the party. The people with leadership titles, I mean, they're not leaders. They're, they're incompetent and they're cowards. But we decry the lack of accountability in all these government institutions and make no effort to impose it on the party to which we affiliate. Not all of us listening, but most. It's just really something. We outsource it to, a handful of downstate Republicans and downstate conservatives in super minority status. And then we're shocked at Pritzker's extremism on, every topic. And all the legislators that are trying to compete with one another to see who can better serve the interests of the new Marxists. Another piece of legislation pending, this is sponsored by Carol Ammons, who's a Champaign-Urbana. Amend the Election Code provides an election authority may elect to mail a vote by to mail a vote by mail ballot to all qualified voters, in sending notices and applications for permanent vote-by-mail status. In other words, make the COVID election the permanent paradigm. Just mail ballots to everybody.
Oh, you're right.
And and then it makes it so much easier for the harvesters.
Right.
Right. And those who are even more nefarious than the harvesters. Just mail out ballots to everybody in Cook County preemptively, and let's see what happens.
And I love how Election Day is now election season. I mean, we've been early voting for the primary here for months. Well, a month, but still.
Robert in Bloomingdale.
You know, this Governor Spaulding, this is just a gift that keeps on giving. You know, my question for the life of me is, how can you be a Catholic in name only and sleep at night knowing that you're for abortion and you're running for public office and you're a Catholic? I mean, it just blows my mind. I mean, these people should be ashamed of themselves for even saying stuff like this. What do you think?
Thanks for the call, Robert. Well, I just have that question. Safe, legal, and rare? Is there anybody who's pro-choice that believes that anymore or no? It's a happy event. The more, the merrier. The more abortions, the better. It's a good. We want to, you know, continue to grow the abortion industry. Is that the posture of the Democrat Socialist Party? And also surrender Republicans or what? What is it? I don't know. It seems to be based on what their leadership is saying and doing. When you repeal parental notification, what does that mean? When you're abortion on demand all 9 months, taxpayer funded, what does that indicate? I just want to understand where people are at, how this is going to go, and who wants to talk about it. Kevin, Austin, Texas.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So, as you guys know, I grew up in Oak Park, Illinois, years ago. I now live in Austin, Texas. And I don't think people know how to get involved.
Oh, that's such bull jive. I'm so sick of listening.
Are you going to cut me off?
Go ahead.
I really don't think people know how to get involved at the precinct level up in Illinois. They have no clue. It's not talked about. In Williamson County, which is right outside, it's kind of like the DuPage County of Austin, Texas, people got involved in precinct level. They kicked out the old Republican establishment just a week ago. And I think if more people knew about how the mechanics of Republican Party works in Illinois, more people would involve. And I'm talking about your listeners specifically. I wish you would talk about how precinct politics works, what meetings to go to, what to do to get involved.
Okay, Kevin, thanks for the call. I mean, Amy's sister found her way to the Wheeling Township Republican Party meeting.
Yeah, she's been going. My dad's been going. And
So was that complicated?
No, it was very simple.
And I'm not saying that
helping somebody become, trying to get in a good person to be a state rep in her district. So she's been very involved.
I'm not saying that the local party organizations have good leadership, because for the most part they don't. Or any. But I mean, you don't know where to go. You don't know how to get involved. I mean, I've made the comment before, like, try to volunteer for the Republican Party. I bet you can't. But that's not the same thing as not knowing what to do. So if you live in, I don't know, my hometown, Milton Township, just for example, you don't know the Milton Township Republican Party. You can't figure out how to get to a meeting. They got a website and stuff, then meetings. And if they don't have meetings, you can't figure out how to run for a precinct committeeman, get a group together, run for precinct committeeman, people you know in the township, and do exactly what Kevin from Austin, Texas said. If you have feckless leadership, then take over the party and do something with it, the local party organization. You have candidates on ballots. You can't figure out who the Republican candidate is for state legislative office and get involved in that campaign? County board? School district? Village board? These things are unknowable. I mean, come on. It's not my fault. Nothing's anybody's fault in Illinois. Everybody's an innocent bystander. Okay, well, that cedes the state to J.B. Pritzker. Mary Kay, Western Springs.
Hey, you know, I met a guy last week who's in his 70s who has a 27-year-old adopted daughter. It was just a beautiful story about how his wife encouraged him. They have older children, and this girl, they knew her. She was pregnant. The baby was up for adoption, and she's getting married, and it was just it was touching and beautiful, and happy to listen to stuff like that. Women of the left do not believe me when I tell them you can get an abortion up to the time of birth. And I just searched all over the internet to try to get information, and I can't find it either. So where do I tell these people to go to find out that it is an absolute fact that this is what they want, and this has happened?
Call an abortion clinic in Illinois and ask them. Thanks for the call, Mary Kay.
Yeah, no,
I mean, my 14-year-old daughter wants to get an abortion. Can she come in?
They won't even ask how far along she is, probably, either. Yeah, of course, you can come in.
Volunteer. Have somebody call. I mean, again, this is unknowable. They're in business. They're doing this every day. The law is the law. What do you can't.
And Governor Newsom always like, well, he won't admit that they have that. He goes, well, no one's using it. I mean, no one's coming in. How do you know? Well, you have an option. So I'm sure somebody's taking advantage of it.
What does that mean? If that means it should be legal or shouldn't be legal?
That's his argument.
Like, if somebody does use it, then it's a problem. If nobody uses it, then it's not a problem.
It's still an option.
I mean, honestly, it's quite exasperating. All right, coming up at 7:07, we'll turn our attention to geopolitics, including Biden's proposed Come to Jesus meeting with Bibi that was summarily rejected, with Stephen Bucci, Heritage Foundation, 7:07.
And those deadly food drops in Gaza.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Unfortunately, and this is something that's near and dear to us at AM560 because of the campaigns that we do with Food for the Poor to provide life-saving food and water to people in countries like Haiti. And a lot of focus is on Haiti because, of course, it's the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. And now it's even in worse condition as the government may fall there. And we just had non-essential personnel evacuated from the U.S. Embassy in Port-au-Prince. So it's a problem on a number of levels. Obviously, the humanitarian level, as this Haiti once again descending into warlordocracy. It's also a potential problem with our situation at the border, because, of course, we've seen surges in migrants coming to our southern border from Haiti before. It's a dangerous trip many of them make across the water to get there. There's been, of course, well-documented cases of boats capsizing and people dying in pursuit of escaping Haiti and coming to America. But when you have a situation at the border that we have, you now just have another whole source of potential problems with an influx of people from yet another country that is disintegrating before our very eyes. So what can and should the U.S. do, the U.S. government, basically to aid what Food for the Poor is doing? It sounds like Food for the Poor may be the last essentially NGO standing down there in terms of providing food and water for the Haitian people that are caught in the crossfire, because you're talking about half of the country's 11 million residents don't have enough to eat. 1.5 million are like near death from starvation. So, you know, multiple levels here in terms of what should be done. And there's a supposed to be a meeting that will include representatives from the United States in, is it Puerto Rico? where they're going to meet, and where the current president is at right now, to try to figure out some sort of game plan. But it's not a good situation right in our neck of the woods. For more on this and other geopolitical matters, I'm pleased to be joined again by Steve Bucci from the Heritage Foundation, served in Special Forces, Pentagon, now at the Allison Center at the Heritage Foundation. Steve, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. It's a sad subject to talk about today, though.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. I mean, obviously the situation in Haiti has been terrible for a long time, and as we were talking about, we're in partner with this nonprofit that does the Lord's work down there. But now we need a geopolitical response because of the potential that the government falls and civil war ignites. Actually, that's what one of the gang leaders has threatened if this current president is not deposed. So, you know, give us sort of how we a strategic framework for thinking about Haiti and the U.S. response.
Well, as you've already mentioned in your intro, there's several layers to this. Obviously, there's an entire law enforcement thing, which is just completely broken down in Haiti. Even for Haiti, it's like out of control. And then you got to shift to, what do these poor people do? Do they, you know, are they going to start coming in this direction? I can tell you the Coast Guard and the Navy are probably already spinning up tremendously for a maritime mass migration, is the term of art for it, that could be spurred as this thing spirals down into even more chaos. So our country has to decide, what in the heck are they going to do? You know, we've already got a migrant crisis going on through our southwest border. We can't fit these people. We don't have facilities for them. Communities are just sort of left to try and figure it out on themselves. And suddenly we're going to have potential for a situation that's worse. This one, I won't say it's legitimate, but it is legitimate. These are people who are, you know, deserve asylum because they're going to be running away from complete chaos, murder, you know, all sorts of horrific things. And we've got to figure out what the heck we're going to do with them. So the National Security Council, the Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, because of its border components, and FEMA are all going to be spinning up today trying to figure out what the heck are we going to do when thousands of people show up that we can't send back because it, you know, you'd be like signing their death warrants, much more so than some of the folks who are claiming that in these other from these other countries. And this is why you don't spend all of your precious assets when you don't have to, because you don't know when you're going to require those assets for an emergency such as this. So the Biden border crisis, which his administration created, his administration exacerbated, and they've used up all these assets, and, you know, they're going to have to get the military involved just from a humanitarian standpoint to manage these people, and that's not the military's job. And to be honest with you, we're not that good at it. You know, I mean, we can do almost anything with the military, but when you're asking them to do stuff that's not in their sweet spots, it's never efficient, it's never cheap, and it's way less effective than you want it to be. So,
yeah,
all the words.
But I mean, right? Well, it's. I mean, it's a conundrum because we've had, as you were just sort of alluding to, we've had catastrophes. Think of Black Hawk Down in Somalia. And so where your instinct to do something that is right by people who are in the crossfire and face death either through, in a ghastly way, through starvation or through murderous gangs, you feel like this moral compunction to do something, but we can't just do something. We've got to do the right thing. We've got to, you know, do something that makes sense, that's within our capacity to do. And it's just more complicated than sort of like feeling empathy and wanting to do something without sort of thinking it through. And then you have these catastrophes like we had in Mogadishu.
Yeah. It's, you know, and to be honest with you, I'm just thinking about what do we do with all the people that come here? But yeah, what
well, right.
are we going to do in Haiti?
Right.
I mean, we, you don't want this, you know, burning mess down in Caribbean. You know, are we going to do something? Are we, we've sent people to Haiti, you know, in historically several times in the past to try and help out when things have gone completely south like they're going this week. Are we going to do that again? You know,
well, and also
the UN had troops too, but they pulled out. So,
well, and also too, the you know their neighbors, the Dominicans, you know they believe in border security.
They sure do.
We know that in some pretty in you know historically in some pretty brutal ways too that we certainly wouldn't sanction. But I'm just saying, you know, that this is also something where you have to think a little bit strategically and enlist the Dominicans to provide some at least temporary relief that perhaps that we could support. I mean, you know, it's and as you say that the Navy scrambling to, maritime resources, what we're doing at the border and the great irony of now you could potentially have people that truly do fit the description of legitimate asylum claims. But because we've mm-hmm. just obliterated the distinction between legitimate and illegitimate, now we're now you have an American public that's not too sympathetic to these asylum claims. You're being overrun at the border. Border Patrol can't process. I mean, it's just such a chaotic situation all the way around.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, we're already at the, you know, to use their term, donor fatigue level because of people asking for asylum and wanting to come here. And now we got a bunch they're legit, but, you know, do we have the assets? Actually, no. Can we scramble up some ad hoc method? Yeah, but, you know, I got to tell you, this is a really, really difficult situation, and you've got an administration that's, they're not really good at crisis management.
Right. Well, speaking of difficult situations, I mean, we have a U.S. Army vessel on its way to Gaza to build this pier. Biden says troops aren't being sent to the Israeli-Hamas war, but troops are going to be building this pier in a not-so-safe location.
Yeah, I loved it when they said there'll be no boots on the ground. Right. Well, last time I checked, if you got to build a pier, somebody's got to go on the ground eventually. You know, you may start out in the water, but something's got to touch land, and the engineers building it have to do that. Right. How do you protect them? You know, you're talking about Hamas.
Right.
They don't care about our people and their safety. And they've got individual actors who are not exactly following, you know, it's not a real strict chain of command there. So we're going to have an engineer vessel right offshore, troops, you know, probably in small boats, you know, working, putting up these the pier components. They are going to be within small arms fire, let alone rockets and missiles. This is a scary thing. And then on top of that, guys, once that pier is built, who's going to monitor the offloading of those materials coming in? Who's going to assure, because this is the Israelis' big problem, how are they going to assure that it's just humanitarian assistance, that it's just food, medical supplies, and there's not underneath the medical supplies, a bunch of new rocket rounds and small arms. And that's the problem the Israelis have with trying to get humanitarian assistance in there, is there's a lot of people who will take advantage of those shipments to get deadly things in there to resupply Hamas. And Israel, I don't think Israel wants to send a bunch of people over into the sea there to monitor that. I hope we're not going to do it. So who's got that responsibility?
And at the same time, you have Biden in his hot mic moment talking about a come to Jesus meeting with Bibi and saying that an assault on Rafah would cross some imaginary red line that they've drawn in their minds. The good news is that Bibi has summarily rejected that criticism, saying the Israeli people are with him and he's going to do what is required to eradicate Hamas. So it seems to me that the Israeli program continues unabated according to what is required to achieve the objective. And Biden's just running his mouth to for the purposes of domestic political interests.
Yeah, I mean, he's made comments in the past, and Netanyahu said, no, that's not what we're doing. And that's risky for Netanyahu to say that, because Biden could cut off aid. He could do something crazy like that, and I hope the people that support Israel in Congress would step forward and raise a stink about that. And it's an election year, so there's that part. And Biden's going to have to worry and figure out which of the two constituencies he is more afraid of losing, the essentially Muslim vote and the radical left vote, or the American Jewish community and the American evangelical community. Which one? I don't think there's too many evangelicals voting for Biden, but there's a lot of American Jews who vote Democrat. And even if they're not, super vocal supporters of Israel, I don't think they want to support Hamas.
This January 6th matter, Molly Hemingway writing in The Federalist about these transcripts that were kept out of sight by that Jan 6 star chamber that House Democrats set up under the previous leadership of the House. A former Representative Liz Cheney suppressed her committee, suppressed evidence that Trump pushed for 10,000 National Guard troops to protect the nation's capital. Deputy Chief of Staff Anthony Ornato's first transcribed interview with the committee was conducted January 28th of 2022. It's more than 2 years ago. He overheard White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows push D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser to request as many National Guard troops as she needed to protect the city. He testified that Trump had suggested 10,000 would be needed to keep the peace at the public rallies and protests scheduled for 1-6-21. Also described White House frustration with Acting Secretary of Defense Christopher Miller's slow deployment of assistance on the afternoon of January 6th of 2021. So these interviews were mischaracterized by the J6 committee, and they were also kept out of the public domain until recently. In fact, Hemingway reports fewer than half of the 1,000 interviews the committee claims it conducted are posted on its site. It's unclear how many of the hidden transcripts include exonerating information suppressed by the committee. What's your reaction to that?
Not surprised, I can tell you. There's enough scuttlebutt going around, in the circles that I'm connected with about things that just like that. So wait a minute, this is not what really happened. There's other people responsible for this, not the president to get these people there. And I'm sorry, Liz Cheney, I have had a lot of respect for her dad. I worked with him when he was the vice president and I was in the Pentagon. But Liz Cheney has become a true believer. She thinks Trump is the Antichrist, for lack of a better term. I don't think she believes in the Antichrist, but you know what I'm talking about. And she was bound and determined to bring him down regardless. And clearly it was not above, we knew it wasn't above people like Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler to twist information to hide exonerating information, and it looks like that those couple of Republicans that were hand-picked by Nancy Pelosi for the committee were going right along with it, and that's unfortunate. This was a critical moment in American history, and it should have been handled correctly with justice and even-handedness, and it wasn't. And you get, you have the books cooked ahead of time, you get a bad result. And I wish the present leadership in the House, the Republican leadership, could get more stuff out on this. you know, those trying to hide it, saying it's classified, you can't let us out. No, it's not classified. There's no national security at risk here. It's the only thing that's at risk is the truth. And, you know, Liz Cheney and her ilk, I'm sorry, they bear a huge responsibility for lying to the American people because the truth didn't fit the narrative they wanted to push.
Yeah, the truth is what they really fear. Stephen Bucci served America for 3 decades as an Army Special Forces officer, top Pentagon official, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation's Allison Center for Foreign Policy Studies. Stephen, thank you as always.
It's my pleasure. You guys have a great week.
You too, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The ads are starting to become more ubiquitous. We played you a new Biden ad following his State of the Union address earlier in the program, which basically just reiterates what he was attempting to convey in his address and the market position they've decided to attempt, which is, I'm an old guy. Sometimes I misstate a few things. I commit malapropism. But look at my record. I've accomplished a lot. Well, Building America's Future has an ad up, too. This is an ad that apparently CNN refused to run.
Oh, it's good.
Gosh, I wonder why.
Lake and Riley should have been able to go on a run in broad daylight without being murdered by an illegal immigrant. But Joe Biden promised not to deport illegal immigrants.
Should that person be deported? That person should not be the focus of deportation.
Biden vowed not to detain illegal immigrants who cross the border.
No one would be put in jail while waiting for their hearing.
So when Jose Ibarra crossed into America illegally, he was not deported. He was not put in jail. Biden also supported sanctuary cities.
Should undocumented immigrants arrested by local police be turned over to immigration officials?
No.
So when Jose Ibarra was arrested in New York City for endangering a child, he was freed a second time. Ibarra went to Georgia, where he beat Lake and Riley to death. How many more killers has Biden set free? Building America's Future is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Bill Malugin, reporting from the border, Fox News' guy, you know. CBP source provided an internal CBP intelligence bulletin revealing tattoos identifiers for Tron de Aragua, the Venezuelan prison gang that's been entering the U.S. illegally through the southern border. Both the CBP source and an ICE source expressed frustration. These Venezuelan gang members are extremely difficult to deport because, of course, Venezuela won't take their citizens back right now. How convenient for them. They can be removed to Mexico, but I'm told they typically then re-enter the U.S. illegally as a gotaway. According to an ICE source, he's quoting, we have a ton of Venezuelans that we can't get rid of. According to ICE and CBP data, in fiscal year 2023, there were 335,000 encounters with Venezuelans at the border, but only 834 Venezuelans were deported. 335,000 encounters, 834 deportations, and now they can't deport people that they don't want to let into this country because they're part of a prison gang, because Venezuela won't take them back. Well,
and Ibarra's brother is an MS-13 gang member. So you don't think he had anything to do with it either? I don't know. The fact that they won't take him back, too bad. So sad, too bad. Take him back to a neighboring country and just let him loose.
Well, don't allow them into this country.
Well, yeah, that would, but we can't, that's not going to happen right now because Biden doesn't want that to happen right now.
Wherever you want to go, you go ahead and go wherever you can go, but you're not coming here. I mean, it's our problem that a prison gang member from Venezuela is banking on being able to enter this country illegally under some phony asylum claim and move about until his case is adjudicated. How insane is that?
Everyone needs to see that ad. I watched it a few times. It's the best campaign ad I think I've ever seen.
And yet, what does the focus post State of the Union on Biden's use of the term illegal, which, you know, again, it's difficult to keep up with the ever-changing lexicon, and it was okay to say illegal just back in the first two terms of the Joe Obama administration, but in this third term, it's not. And so that was the focus, not just in the postmortem on his State of the Union on Friday, but all weekend, about whether or not he should have characterized Lakin Riley's alleged killer as illegal. By the way, our very own Chuy Garcia, he's a congresswoman. Yeah. As a proud immigrant, I'm extremely disappointed to hear President use the word illegal. Is immigrant and illegal, are those synonyms?
He voted against the Lakin Riley Act, too, shockingly.
Biden had to bend the knee. Company man. Always been a company man. And he said a word that the company doesn't tolerate anymore. So he bent the knee over the weekend in a sit-down with Jonathan Capehart, that is, from New York Times and MSNBC.
During your response to her heckling of you, you used the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Lakin Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And look, when I spoke about the difference between Trump and me, one of the things I talked about on the border was that the way he talks about vermin, the way he talks about these people polluting the blood. I talked about what I'm not going to do, what I won't do. I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect. Look, they built the country. The reason our economy is growing, we have to control the border and more orderly flow. But I don't share his view at all.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
These illegals didn't build the country. They're taking down our country. They're killing American citizens. Big difference.
Yeah, it's but I tell you, if there was any question whether or not there was going to be give on this issue, oh, maybe he'll issue an executive order or two because, you know, you've got us, even he said you're there, or, you know, more orderly entrance into this country. So, but any thought that he was going to give at all, I think that should be dispelled. Right. Because yep. He had the opportunity to State of the Union. That didn't happen. He gets held up over his inadvertent use of the word illegal, for which he apologizes within 24 hours. And there is zero tolerance. I mean, and just the fact that they're obsessed with the use of that word, because they understand that words matter. And they're precise with their language for the purposes of propagandizing issues. That should tell you there is no space for anyone from the new Marxist Party to be for anything other than open borders. There's no space. So you can, this compromise piece of legislation that brought bipartisan with Lankford and Schumer. That's if Republicans want to surrender, they'll accept your surrender and pretend that there's some border security measures in there. But it's what Biden just said. Slow the flow.
That was just another
example. More orderly flow.
Yeah, about how he doesn't care about Lakin Riley. He could have used that opportunity to apologize for pronouncing her name wrong and then to apologize to her parents for her death or show some humility. All he cares about is, he didn't want to, you know, upset his Democratic base.
Well, as Senator Chris Murphy said, the people that we care about the most, the people in this country illegally. That's yep. Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut, part of the new Marxist leadership of the Democrat of the new Marxist Party. This is their position. So, I think some people maybe have a hard time internalizing this. Like this is the position. What he should just do this, and why doesn't he do that? Because he's telling you that is not their viewpoint. That is not their policy agenda. They're not going to do it. They may try to, sort of flummox you with language about bipartisan border security bill and we didn't even have a path to citizenship in this and so on and so forth. But that is just a misdirection play. All these opportunities at the height of this crisis, with it potentially getting worse because of Haiti's disintegration, as we were just talking about with Stephen Bucci, and there's no move. There is no move.
Well, it's just disgraceful that Biden's apologizing to illegals. Dear God.
Right. The dignity of people who break into this country, the dignity of people who abide the laws of this country, the people, the dignity of the people who attempt to emigrate to this country legally,
He apologized to a criminal. If you think
Grant and Rockford, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, you guys. Happy Monday. Listen, this dovetails with your Stephen Bucci thing. My give-a-crap tank about anybody else in any other country is really, really, really low. I'm sorry for what's happening in Haiti, but they can fix their own house. We can't fix our own house. It's absolutely incredible. And I think I told you guys I picked up a second job working in a liquor store because of the lovely Bidenomics. And I tell you what, 9, 10 o'clock at night, 3, 4, or 5 of these Venezuelans come in, they're covered in tattoos. They don't speak a lick of English. They got nicer clothes than I do. They bust out a crisp $100 bill. I'm sick of it. It's not fair. Meanwhile, I got boots with holes in them, and I'm struggling to put food on the table. And then, have a good day, guys. Happy time change.
Thanks for the call, Grant. Yeah, well, speaking of houses, these big cities are going to need people to start opening theirs, like Denver.
We're going to have some newcomers who are going to need housing.
This email was sent to rental property owners in Denver asking if they'd be interested in renting to migrants looking for housing.
Looking at kind of a rent cap, $2,000. If we could stay underneath there.
The effort to get migrants into their own home is being spearheaded by entities beyond the city of Denver.
The nonprofits already have connected folks with all kinds of housing all over Denver.
Officials are saying the results speak for themselves, with thousands making their way out of shelters.
We're at below 1,800 right now, which is the first time that number's been this low since September.
That number was as high as 4,500 people in shelters, according to the city, as recently as January. Posts by migrant on social media before were about finding a home. Well, now
a lot of those folks are, you know, those posts have now been replaced by, hey, I now need to furnish my apartment. What do I do? And so it's a good problem to have when that's what you're running into.
No, it's a great problem.
Oh, I love these kinds of problems.
I'll tell you, when the $2,000 that you're paying a landlord to rent his space to me, and then I just got this other problem furnishing it. So I'm going to need a little bit more assistance with the furnishing, too. But that's a great problem to have for the city of Denver and all these nonprofits, NGOs that they're enlisting, I'm sure, to help underwrite this.
Don't forget about the bedding. And then you need utensils and pots and pans. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. And I love how they're calling them newcomers instead of illegals.
Need
newcomers. Like, yay, meet your new neighbors. And now can you house your new neighbors?
And pretty soon it's going to be no problem with furnishings, but I need a little help with the cable,
right?
The Wi-Fi.
The cell phone's kind of old. I'd like a new upgrade on my cell phone, please, because we bought everybody's cell phones. You know,
I was thinking of maybe I'd enroll in the Cheese of the Month Club. Can the city help with that? Corey in Woodlawn, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, Dan and Amy. You know, I listened to the State of the Union speech, and every other word out of his mouth is, we owe, we owe, we owe. America is $35 trillion in debt at the federal level. We don't owe anybody anything. It's time for us to start taking care of our own. And if we don't get these politicians out of our pocket, we're never going to have anything. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Corey. Yeah. Yeah. We owe people who broke into this country. What do we owe them? I mean, we owe them
nothing.
I mean, we owe you to treat them decently, yes, and to turn them around. Say, did you not see the line? Did you not see the line? This is how it works. This is what you have to do. There are ports of entry, and there's a process, and so on and so forth. But again, that is not the position of this administration, and it's not going to change. And what you're going to see in the big city level, like Denver, is the attempt to sort of assimilate them. something else and continue to underwrite them and hope that basically these big city populations are just as inured to this malfeasance and spend, and you know, spending beyond means that is customary with everything else. Something else, too, that when he had that exchange with MTG, and when Biden did at State of the Union,
right?
Something else that hasn't been picked up on that I just wanted to focus on. It hasn't been talked about enough, in my view. I just wanted to focus on his reaction when he was off script and he had to go back and forth with MTG.
Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of the thousands of people being killed by illegals? To her parents, I say, my heart goes out to you, having lost children myself. I understand.
So everybody focuses on him confusing Lincoln Riley for the head football coach at USC. But what about the other thing he said?
Well, I probably have a different point of contention. Mine is that he talks about, I know what it's like to lose a child, because Bo was not murdered. Bo is a 43-year-old who got to live. Lincoln Riley is never going to have other certain opportunities like find, you know, husband and children. She was violent. Her life was violently taken away.
So how many thousands are killed by legals?
Right. What was that?
This is one of the knee-jerk, default, misdirectional responses. Right. We've got a public safety problem, particularly in big cities and urban centers, that involves both American citizens and people in this country illegally. So why would you want to exacerbate it? Why would you want to exacerbate the domestic problem we have? Right. The response should be, and the emphasis should be, preventable crime, whether it is at the hands of citizens or non-citizens. But that this is the knee jerk. Oh, well, they do. We have Americans who commit crimes, too. I know. And you're soft. You know, you and your party gives them a pass, too. You give everybody a pass when it comes to preying on American citizens. The law abiding are just there to be fleeced and literally, in many cases, attacked. That needs some emphasis. That needs some focus on how illogical and insulting that response was. How many people do legals kill? By the way, they're called American. You're speaking of words. They're called American citizens, not legals. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. As I mentioned, we spoke quite a bit about this documentary last week after it got posted. It wasn't Fauci, How the Deep State Really Played Trump. Documentary about COVID. It wasn't Fauci. Spoiler alert, it was Birx. But the dive on this needs to be substantially deeper. And this is an important part of the conversation if we're going to have any sort of reckoning and official record that reflects the truth of what happened and at whose hands it happened. And the interesting thing I found out about the documentary, too, was just how close it was in the summer to early fall of 2020, how close it was to going a different direction than it went, where the lockdowners had their say and had their way. And the thing spiraled out of control with Trump losing. And then, of course, the lockdowners being fully in charge with no pushback. But it could have been different. And we focus so much on Fauci for obvious reasons, because he was the face guy. But Birx was the policy point person. She was the one communicating with governors. She was the one writing the recommendations, quote unquote, because they were treated as edicts that were being distributed. Even when she was openly disagreeing with the president of the United States, not to mention Scott Atlas. Scott Atlas, after he was brought on, you know, he's the radiologist from Stanford that came in late when finally Trump expanded the circle of the institutional advisors to include somebody that was saying things that were true and skeptical of the official positions that we now know, you know, were seat of the pants stuff that was not based on any science and data. Oh, the 6-foot separation rule, that just sort of appeared, says Tony Fauci in testimony behind closed doors these days. But how different it could have been if Atlas had and others had been included earlier, had staff been a little bit more dutiful in paying attention to what Birx was doing and thinking through the implications of what the lockdowners were promoting based on the philosophy they took to attacking this virus. And that was Birx. All roads lead back to Birx. Here was Scott Atlas, who was interviewed for the documentary, sort of summarizing the impact of Deborah Birx's leadership.
They destroyed everybody to stop cases of COVID, and it destroyed millions of people. That is the legacy of the Birx guidance.
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by the documentarian himself. Rob Montz is the CEO of Good Kid Productions. Again, the film, It Wasn't Fauci, How the Deep State Really Played Trump, which is available on YouTube. That's also something we probably couldn't have been able to say a couple of years ago.
No,
available on YouTube.
Available anywhere.
Rob Montz, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Thank you for having me. That was a great introduction.
Well, so let's start. We talked about it, but let's do a little bit of a refresher from your perspective. Because this is so critical. I didn't appreciate this until I saw your documentary. But Birx's background as the point person in terms of AIDS prevention in Africa, and she basically cut and pasted her approach from AIDS to COVID. This is why you term it the COVID-AIDS approach.
Yeah. Well, let me just reemphasize that people can, at least for now, view the entirety of what we're talking about on our YouTube channel, just Good Kid Productions. I've had some reports that people have had issues finding it by searching the title. But if you do go to our channel, Good Kid Productions, as of 5 minutes ago, it is still the first thing that you will see. So people can watch it there. Just to give a little bit more context, we now know definitively whether or not lockdowns worked. They did not work. There's tons and tons of research about this, that the degree of restriction by state-by-state basis did not have any influence whatsoever in COVID death rates, okay? This is an extremely inconvenient and awkward fact for the American people to confront, given how much suffering was imposed upon them. But we now know that, right? And we also know that there's these lingering excess deaths years and years after COVID, where all the social and economic dislocation that was wrought by the lockdowns continues to harm people's lives. Okay, flashback to the summer of 2020. There was always this central mystery that Trump, he's not good at a lot of things, but he does have this guerrilla instinct for sniffing out things like this. In the summer of 2020, he had noticed that the lockdowns appeared to come at a much higher cost than the benefits that they were generating. He did notice it. He saw it. He felt it. That's why he called in Scott Atlas. But despite him turning on the lockdowns through the full course of his presidency, all the way through January of 2021, the formal White House COVID policy was still pro-lockdown, right? And you're like, that's a really strange thing to have occurred. This is the biggest news story of our lifetime, and yet nobody has solved it. Nobody's thought to look into why exactly was there this disconnect between what the president was saying and what his own White House was recommending. And again, as made evident by the title of the piece, I think a lot of your listeners would initially kind of instinctually assume that it was Anthony Fauci. That was the reason why there was this disconnect. And we talked to over a dozen former Trump White House officials, and they made it clear to us that it was not, that it was actually this woman named Deborah Birx, who maybe your audience remembers, maybe they don't remember, but she's the reason why she was able to engineer what we've called a soft coup with Trump. Her background is in AIDS, and what she does when she's first called up to the White House is she decides to make this parallel between the two diseases. And that in turn has some very significant policy consequences. What we'd like to say in the doc, though, is that maybe in the first month or two of the pandemic, it was reasonable for her to try to draw this parallel. 6 months deep into her tenure, it was not only unreasonable, it was actively damaging to the country for her to misconceptualize the nature of the threat of COVID, what it was and what it wasn't. So when people are wondering, why is it that the lockdown policies championed by July of 2020 were focused on reducing cases to zero, regardless of the broader indirect cost to the rest of society? That's the reason why, because the person who was engineering COVID policy, Deborah Birx, was treating COVID like AIDS.
Right. And the lack of internal pushback until Scott Atlas got there and tried to orchestrate meetings with other, you know, equally credentialed experts in this field, like Martin Kulldorff at Harvard, epidemiologist and others. You see, Trump recognized the costs were exceeding the benefits, but nobody was saying, like, does anybody question the sort of underlying philosophical approach that Deborah Birx is driving and that she sort of wouldn't relent on, regardless of the evidence and regardless of even, as I mentioned at the outset, contradictory statements coming from the White House? I mean, that's such a failure on Pence's, on Trump, on Pence, on the staff that she was able to manipulate and work around, as you document.
Right. Well, I mean, let's not get it twisted, all right? And I've seen a little bit of this in the comments, that somehow people think that we're going light on Trump in this. I can assure you.
No, you're not.
We are not. Anybody who still supports him to reelect needs to confront and give me a good answer why what we document isn't immediately disqualifying for him. Straight up, all right? Straight up. Because we mount some significant evidence indicating that the levels of incompetence and executive chaos in his White House were completely unacceptable. Completely unacceptable. It's not the only part of the story, but that is the environment, that's the power vacuum that allows Birx to snatch all this power. Now, she also does some devious stuff. She does some devious stuff. But as we detail in the documentary, the devious things she does, I think people, when they hear the word like soft coup, they imagine some like epic power struggle, right? Some like Game of Thrones, like multi-chapter, like epic story of intrigue. But what we detail is that what she had to do in order to snatch all this power from Trump was extraordinarily normal and pedestrian. It's like a couple emails and a couple taps on the edit button in a Google Doc, and she's able to steal all this power that was meant to be his and continue to impose lockdowns on the country well past the point that they were a reasonable policy response to COVID. Like, it's so simple. And that all this power, just because of these lucky, weird turns of history, falls on this one woman. It really was this one woman and a couple of her assistants that was setting formal White House policy for the whole country. And like, how is it exactly that she got that position? What informed her beliefs? What was her disposition? These are all questions that nobody read her book. She wrote a memoir. Nobody read it because it's extremely boring. And right. She's like a dysfunctional narcissist. But it's worth investigating who this woman was, given that she was definitely one of the top five most powerful people in the country for a couple months. Don't you want to know what's
Yeah, but
inside
why did
of her
she
psychology?
Treat COVID like AIDS? They're completely, one's an airborne illness. I mean, they're not even similar in any ways.
I mean, because she's an intellectual mediocrity.
That's
the honest answer.
All right.
I mean, and she's still doing it, by the way. she made a media hit. She did a media appearance like a month ago. I don't know who it was, where she was saying she went on a 5-minute monologue about how long COVID is like AIDS. She's still doing it in 2024, guys. This is still happening.
No, it's I know, but so here's the question. Here's the question I had, you know, as watching your documentary, is so what is it that, especially if Trump's spidey senses were tingling, now you have Scott Atlas in there. Why is nobody listening to Scott Atlas and these other experts that he attempted to convene to meet with Trump? They had a conversation. You know, Trump was inquisitive, and yet it was still sidelined by Trump. He allowed it, by Pence, by Jared Kushner, by staff that wasn't reading what Deborah Birx was writing. Nobody was paying attention to what's going on in the country, and then internally saying, you know, what is Deborah Birx? Is this Deborah Birx's strategy really the one that we should consider? What about what Scott Atlas is saying? What about all these other people that started to come out and do media, like Joseph Ladapo, and I mentioned Kaldorf and Bhattacharya and Gupta and others? Nobody's saying, well, you know, do these other experts have a point? Should we be rethinking something? Why didn't that happen?
I think it's... primarily, it was a cynical political calculation. All right. Mm-hmm. Again, this is another blemish on the Trump presidency version 1.0 that I need his supporters to properly reckon with. I need good answers about this, because, again, we have firsthand testimony from a bunch of people on camera saying that Atlas got sidelined because the Trump political team was worried that firing Birx would cost them the election. They did. They straight up thought that it would cost them the election.
They had platformed.
They weren't willing to stand on their convictions.
Right. They had platformed Birx and Fauci and, you know, Trump and his way, always with the superlatives for anybody on his team until they're no longer of use. He was pumping them and burnishing their reputation over the summer. And now what are we supposed to do? Dump them in favor of Scott Atlas?
It's this odd feature of the modern version of the cult of the presidency, which, frankly, Trump is the most like concentrated version of, where people are obsessed with him. And obviously there's like a borderline religious fanaticism for some substantial part of the people that support him. But they love him for the theatrics. And again, he's an incredible performer. He's an extremely charismatic communicator. But it's almost like that's all people want from him. They don't actually care about him utilizing the powers of this office that he occupies, the awesome powers of the office. And so they just wanted him to say the right words about COVID and to, you know, lambast Fauci or the governors. They don't actually care that in the moment that he had the power, he failed to use it, right? It's the cult of the presidency purely as performance art. There's no cult of the presidency in terms of the actual usage of the power. That's why it's ludicrous to talk about Trump as a fascist, because when he had power the first time around, he refused to use it. He gave the entire COVID portfolio to Mike Pence, right? It's like he didn't actually want it. He just wants to perform on Twitter. So what you want. That's fine. But at least to catastrophically mis-engineer public policy responses.
But he gave people false hope. I'll never forget when he got up there and said, after Easter, we're gonna be reopened. Everything's gonna be fine. And I believed him. And clearly that didn't happen.
Right. And again, I give him credit for having sniffed out that the orthodoxy of the public health establishment was wrong, focusing on driving cases to zero and being completely insensitive to all the other economic and human carnage that would cause. I give him credit for sniffing that out. But it's not enough just to say it at a press conference or to post it on Twitter. Like, you're the president, bro. Like, you're the person who's in charge of personnel.
Right. Act like it.
You just didn't do anything. You did nothing.
Yeah, and we've said for a while now, especially in the primary when DeSantis first got in, that Trump would do himself a real service and the country a real service if he helped to initiate this reckoning that we're so desirous of by admitting the mistakes that he made and the failures in those critical moments, as you document, where he was AWOL, or as you say, he had outsourced it to Mike Pence. By the way, Mike Pence also should be compelled to provide an accounting as well and respond to the details you have in your film. Rob Mons is the CEO of Good Kid Productions. The film, again, it wasn't Fauci, how the deep state really played Trump. Must check this out. It's very good. It's only about 25 minutes, and it can be viewed at Good Kid Productions, Good Kid Productions, the YouTube channel for Good Kid Productions. It's right there for now, at least. Rob Mons, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, the Mr. DEI ESG D-bag. Just because he's a leftist thug, though, doesn't mean he's wrong about cryptocurrency. Interesting exchange between him and Charlie Gasparino on Fox Business on Bitcoin, which this morning is topping $71,000, up 3.5-fold since last year. Here's Larry Fink.
There's a lot of merit to it. There's a lot of opportunity. It is a great store, and this is where you can debate. Is it a good store?
But you know how it's made. A bunch of computers figure out
math
problems.
But the issue is if people believe that it can be an asset that can be cross-border. Right. And let's be clear. If you're in a country where you're fearful of your government, and maybe this is one of the reasons why China has banned it. Mm-hmm. If you're in a government where... if you're in a country where you're fearful of your future, fearful of your
right.
government, or you're frightened that your government is devaluing its currency by too much deficits.
Like us.
I'm not going to go there.
Go to the little elephant in the room here.
Yeah. You could say this is a great potential long-term store of value. And it, as I said, it's like digital gold. And I believe...
But you still can't buy a slice of pizza with it. Isn't that kind of odd that we're...
But you can't buy a price of pizza with palladium or gold. It is a ledger, but it's an international ledger. It's cross-border. It's bigger than any government.
I agree with you. It would have blown up, I believe, in FTX, and it didn't after FTX.
For more on this and just the general economic landscape... Jim Perry, founder, CIO of Perry International Capital Partners, joins us. Jim, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. Good morning.
What's your reaction to what Fink had to say about Bitcoin amid this this pretty prodigious spike we've seen over the last year and even more so recently?
I think that Larry Fink realizes that the Bitcoin ETF is a really great way for BlackRock to make a lot of money. So he's going to promote the idea that people should buy it through BlackRock. As far as value is concerned, I think there is some. I just don't know what it is. You know, Bitcoin miners are going to have the cost of mining their Bitcoin go up by 50% here in the next month or so. And I guess they make money by processing this ledger, you know, and I think
is Fink right when he says that so much of this, I mean, this is a little bit sort of the argument that this is a 21st century version of Tulip Mania, that so much of it is predicated on mistrust of government. And despite Larry Fink not wanting to go there, that includes here in the U.S., where there's all this talk about America losing its status as the reserve currency and the $35 trillion in debt and so forth. I mean, which are real issues, but I'm just saying that's really what's feeding the turn to Bitcoin question.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, that's really the core of the issue. It's a very libertarian sort of concept, and I know a lot of people who are really into it, and it's half the people you talk to think it's great, and half the people you talk to think it's ridiculous. But I think the psychology behind going into Bitcoin is people really don't trust the government anywhere, Europe, China, anywhere, mm-hmm. you know. And the fact is that these financial systems, this is fiat currency central here, right? You know, I mean, we've got $34 trillion worth of debt, and there's no way that we're ever going to pay it back. So people recognize that, you know, at some point, you're going to either have to devalue your currency or write off your debt. There's really no other option. Well, there's three. You can devalue your currency, write off your debt, or you can try to inflate your way out of a slow growth economy, which is what is the path that governments usually take. Inflate your way out.
Well, speaking of inflating, we've got inflation numbers coming out this week. What's the expectation?
It's a very important week, Dan, for the markets. We do get the consumer price index, which is retail inflation. And then we get the wholesale prices. And then we get, I think, what's becoming a more interesting and focused data point is this University of Michigan inflation expectations in 1 year. Right? Now, it is a survey, so you've got to take it as a grain of salt. But the fact is that, you know, even though Powell doesn't talk about it much, and the Fed doesn't talk about it much, and the government doesn't talk about it as much, and Wall Street doesn't talk about it much, but, you know, inflation expectations are rising. And this University of Michigan one-year inflation number is probably going to come in at plus 4% this week. And that would be right in line with what the market expectations for one-year inflation are. There's a metric called the break-even inflation in the Treasury inflation-protected securities market. And market investors have pushed that inflation expectation to 4% last week. So if we get a 4% number from the surveys, you know, these are the highest inflation numbers we've seen for a year. And I think if inflation looks like it's coming up, and I've been talking about that, as you know, for 2 years, Perry Capital has had a stagflation forecast for a long time, which is low growth, sort of 2%, 2.5%. Inflation, which is rising faster than growth, which is 4%. And wage inflation rising faster than that, which is pushing it, which is about 5% or 6%, depending on which statistic you look at.
And that's where we are.
Yeah, I think we've got a stagnating economy. And the Bitcoin story is investors want to get money out of the market because they see a devalued currency coming. And the currency, the dollar's trading down. Dollar's down 1.5% last week and down 4% over the last sort of little bit of this rally. So I think getting part of your capital, your savings, out of the bond market, out of the stock market, is an appealing psychological comfort level for investors.
So has the market recanted its expectation that you'll see one or two rate cuts this year? Is it and now pricing in no rate cuts based on what Powell said last week and the numbers like you're talking about potentially this week?
Right. Well, Powell was pretty dovish last week, right? I mean, you know, he said that he fully expects to have the economy or the inflation numbers come down enough where the Fed's going to be able to ease. So this whole rally, the last sort of 16 weeks since the October lows, has been investors front running the next rate cut. And frankly, I understand it and I get it, but it seems to me that there's a lot of stimulus in the economy already, right? And I think that maybe rates don't move very far at all. Maybe they just sit here for the next year. And if that's the case, the stock market's too expensive. So I'm a little bit worried that valuations have gotten ahead of themselves, mainly because the government is spending so much money that they would have spent in a year, and they're bringing it to the future, right? So they're moving future activity up to the front of the election so that we can see a positive GDP number going into the Democratic convention here in Chicago in August.
But if you get the 4% inflation number that you anticipate this week, does that change Powell's calculus? I mean, in terms of the possibility of a rate cut this year?
I think the rate cut story is a tricky one, because if you look at the Fed funds futures market, which I know is slightly nerdy, but, you know, there's five rate cuts priced into the Fed funds futures market into December, the first one coming in June. I personally have been pushing back on rate cuts for this whole cycle. I think that the odds of a rate cut this summer, the market would love to have it. That's why they keep doing it. But if inflation keeps going up, I think the Fed can sit here at 5.5% for the next, through the election. Anyway, you know?
And NVIDIA is not going to be able to sustain this run.
NVIDIA is a very, very expensive stock. They've got a nice little moat around them right now, but it's not a very deep one. And the fact is that, you know, they're still making hardware, right? Semiconductors are commodities, and they go through cycles. They go up and down, and NVIDIA hit it just right. That, you know, good for them. They found the right product at the right time. They're selling these GPU units for $30,000 a piece, and the big cap tech stocks are buying them because they're building out these data centers because we need so much computing power and so much energy to manage this new trend in AI, you know?
So we had the Communist People's Gathering in Beijing last week with President Xi presiding over, you know, applause from 3,000 apparatchiks. What comes out of, you know, what, if anything, can you read coming out of the big party powwow in Beijing in terms of China will be doing this year, and its impact on the United States in this stagflationary environment that you're talking about, with China having a similar problem in terms of the number of jobs it needs to create, you know, through central planning to sort of sustain political stability.
Right, right. I was talking to a few strategists last week about this, and I've talked about it for the last sort of quarter or two, or even this whole cycle. China is going through a asset write-off circumstance, much like Japan did in the late 80s and early 90s. And they're going to have to write off trillions of dollars worth of real estate values. And, you know, the problem with China is that they spent so much money that they didn't have on building out all their airports and ports and roads and buildings, that you look at the Chinese miracle over the last three decades or so, and you can see it's all about government spending. So now they're so worried about AI and advanced computing and social media that their best option is to shut this stuff down because they don't want to lose power as a communist party. That's the way they're going forward with this. If the Chinese Communist Party thinks by shutting down information allows them to stay in power, and that's the best option that they have, they're in trouble. I wouldn't put a dime in China. I don't trust those guys any further than I could throw them.
Jim Perry, founder, CIO, Perry International Capital Partners. Jim, thank you as always.
Thank you, Dan. Have a good week.
Thanks. He joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, Dan, I just want you to know a great man died, and I want to publicly say goodbye to Joe Smek. He worked at NBC for 37 years, but he's also a farmer, which is more important, and also more important than that, a great family man, and he's going to be laid to rest this morning in Lena, Illinois, and what a guy. I mean, he would treat a president and a homeless man the same. He treated everybody with respect, and he had such a positive attitude, and he's going to be missed. He was he served in Vietnam and was lucky enough to come back and survive that, and he survived 37 years at NBC.
What did he do at NBC?
He was a photographer, and he also did sound for NBC Network, and he was in Salt Lake City with us for the Olympics, and he was in charge of curling, and he was so proud to show me. He's like, I put a microphone on top of the stone so you can hear the, you know, the sound when people are curling. He was so proud
curling.
Of his job. And
sport of the future.
Yeah, and right? It is wake yesterday. They had his cowboy boots out, and his coffin was draped in a flag. And he was just a really decent man, and there's not a lot of decent family men left in this world. So God bless you, Joe Smek, and you will never be forgotten. All right, thanks so much for making us part of your morning. Thanks to George Hoffman, who's in for Justin Kosick and Quinn McCarthy. We're back here bright and early tomorrow morning at 5 a.m.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.